As we begin this sitting, I would like to offer you a little practice, a little aid to the mindfulness practice that you might want to try for the period. And that is to, as you're sitting here, especially if your mind is busy and a lot of thoughts, is to very gently, silently in your own mind, say the word here, as in here and now. Here. And use that word as a reminder to be here, to be aware, attentive to what is actually present in the immediacy of your experience, not in your thoughts about some other place or time, future or past, but to really discover what it is to be alive, to be a human being here, what we might call the living present, the living time, the time that we live in. What is it like to be here? Simply say the word here in a kind of easygoing, regular way. And one way to do this is to say the word here on each out-breath. Here. You're nowhere else. This is the precious place we're going to show up, be present, relax into. Here. And say here, and then discover, feel what it's like to be a human being here, this time and place. Here. So, what I'd like to talk about today is a little technique that is often practiced together with mindfulness practice. And in the particular tradition that I was trained in mindfulness practice, this technique was actually quite prominent. And it's meant to be a support, an aid, a very strong aid for our ability to pay attention, to be mindful. So the technique is that of what's called mental noting or labeling. And so that's what I want to talk about, review, let you know about it. And start with that is little discussion of this practice of using the word here. Those of you who came late didn't hear this, but at the beginning of the sitting, I encourage people to, if they wanted to today, to say the word here as they sit here, just in a regular way, maybe in every out-breath, say here. And I find this to be a very helpful little practice to do. And it's something that, especially when my mind is busy, if I'm trouble being present because my mind just wants to think about something really actively, saying here helps to cut through that, sometimes very effectively, not immediately, not the first word, but to say it repeatedly. Because for me, when I say the word here, it reminds me where I really am. I'm here. And so I might be thinking about something far away, but then when I hear here, then, oh, this is where I am. And then what I do when I say here is I then notice what here is like, what this present moment experience is like. And if my mind is quite busy, then the present moment experience is, here I am, a person who has a very busy mind. And this is the way it is. This is what it feels like. This is the experience of having a busy mind. When I say the word here, and then to experience here, I do it very, I try to do it very generously to the present moment, where I'm not trying to make anything happen. I'm not trying to, beyond just cutting through those thought trains, I'm just simply trying to be awake to this present moment experience. Not trying to make this present moment different, not trying to fix it, not trying to make it, you know, better, not leaning into the future, but just curious of what the present moment experience is really like. And I find it helpful for me, very helpful, to do that exploration. What is this experience here like? Without any agenda about it. So if mind is really busy, then what is it like to have a mind that's really busy right now? As soon as I bring that little curiosity to my present moment experience, then I'm no longer enmeshed with the thoughts that I'm having. They might still be going on, but I'm not entangled with them. And I'm stepping a little bit apart from them, a little bit removed in a sense, a little bit disengaged from them, so I can be more awake and see more clearly what's going on. And some people liken mindfulness to the practice of turning on a light in a dark room. You might have a flashlight, you know, you kind of little teeny little LED light, you know, you're kind of looking, and you can kind of see what's there, but then mindfulness is like you turn on the flashlight, the light, and suddenly you see it all. So mindfulness is more that quality of just going, what is here, without being entangled with what is here. So I'll say the word here. I say it maybe repeatedly. Sometimes I'll say it in the out-breath until my mind is stabilized so it can be here more regularly. Can it be here without being running away in my thoughts? So it does a few things. It kind of brings me here, and it also reminds me to be here in a curious way, in a non-judgmental way, in a non-reactive way, just here with what this experience is like. Very occasionally, I've imagined that I'm an anthropologist from Mars, and somehow I've entered into a human body, and I have to make field notes. So I can go back to Mars and tell people what it's like to be a human being. So, oh, wow, that person's really upset about something. You know, being upset is like this. And so you don't want to get the person not upset quickly, because then you won't study. But a naturalist doesn't interfere, right? So you're just kind of like, this is what it's like. So you try to experience what it's like. Now this movement of just experiencing things as they actually are, without any agenda for or against or trying to make something happen, is a very interesting one, because it goes counter to the way most of us are operating most of the time. Most human minds, most human beings, are operating on desire and aversion, wanting something to happen, wanting something to go away, being caught in fantasy, thinking about the future, being afraid, thinking about the past, being anxious. There's all this movement and reaction that can be summarized in a simplistic way, that a huge percentage of human activity has to do with not accepting the present moment. It kind of lays the foundation for some people's personalities. The kind of the foundation stone of the personality is somehow not non-acceptance of what is. So when you pull the rug from underneath that, or you pull that cornerstone out of the building, a lot begins to crumble and fall down. So the simple thing of here, what is here? Just experiencing it is very different from how it is for many minds. It might seem very petty at first, or mundane, or uninteresting, or where's that going to take you? But if you realize how counter it is to how the mind usually operates, then you can maybe give it the benefit of the doubt, and chances are you'll find that if you can stay here, stay in this accepting mode, that your present moment experience will change quite radically, even though you're not wanting it to change, because you're just here for what it is, what's here. So I find it very interesting, this word here, because it's a word. And it offers kind of the intersection between our language, our wording, our cognitive abilities, and the present moment reality. It's the meeting of those two, where in the meeting of those two, our words help us to stay here, point us to here, to experience the present moment more fully. If I think all of us have meditated, have the experience of knowing how our words, our thoughts, can take us away. Words can take us away, and words can connect us to the present moment. And so, so it's very important to see that difference, and then not to reject the world of language and words. But is it possible to use our languaging ability to help us to wake up, to be present more fully to our experience? And I would suggest there are times when words are very helpful for this, as the word here is, if you're distracted or scattered, here. This is a little bit, kind of jumping in from a different angle now, but sometimes I think of the human being as being like a person leisurely, at ease, resting on the bank of a river, watching the river go by. And there's all this, leaves go by, and twigs go by, and fish go by, and boats go by, and steamboats go by, and ocean liners go by, and all the stuff goes by. And you're sitting there, it's a nice day, you watch it all go by. It's very interesting, very nice. But then, sooner or later, and for some people it's sooner, and some people it's later, one of those boats is really interesting. There's like a steamboat that has a casino on it, and a cabaret, and it offers so much promise. So much possibility for getting rich, so much possibility of pleasure, so much, so much possibility. And so, we kind of like venture into the river and get onto that boat. Not noticing, the boat is carrying us down the river far from where we began. Into the rapids, into, difficult terrain, difficult river areas. And, practice of meditation is learning how to stay on the riverbank, to watch everything go by and not venture out into the river. And if you do find yourself in the river on a boat, to find your way back on the river where it's dry and safe. So what I'm going to suggest here today is that words can help in that process of staying on the river. Words can help in the process of not getting caught on these boats. Most people have the most experience of their words helping them get on the boats. And I think it's a wonderful thing for the mind to retrain itself and have available to it a certain tool of language that helps us stay dry, stay awake, rather than letting language just always being used by the mind that gets distracted. So, we have the practice in mindfulness of mental noting. Noting or mental labeling, putting a label on our experience that we're experiencing. I know that some people rebel to this practice, partly because they don't like the idea of labeling something. Labeling limits, they think. It always limits, it always puts something in a category. It's a little bit removed from the direct experience. Labeling, can have kind of a lot of negative connotations in our language. Noting maybe is a little bit easier, but to note something. However, I would like to suggest that that's not always the case, not necessarily the case, that mental noting can be very helpful. So what we do in mindfulness practice, I mean, we don't have to do it, but this little aid, this little technique of mental noting, is as we're experiencing something, we gently, softly, relaxedly, name that experience. We don't name it Fred and Anna and George. We label it in a very simple label that characterizes what it is we're paying attention to. So if we're watching our breath, we might say in, out, or rising, falling. If we're hearing a sound, we might say hearing. If we're having an itch, we say itching. some very simple, very obvious word that characterizes the experience. One of the things we're doing by doing this is we're using our thinking to help us be present. We're using a very rudimentary, almost primitive aspect of the thinking mind to point the mind into the experience we're noticing in the present moment, to help us stay there and see it for what it is. If the thinking mind is idle, if you're trying to have non-verbal mindfulness meditation, just kind of aware and present with this kind of empty mind that isn't thinking, chances are for most people who don't have a developed mind, the mind hasn't gotten as concentrated, chances are very good that that idle mind will get in trouble, that the thinking mind will just creep into that vacuum and carry us away down in the steamboat. So by using the mental labeling, it's like using a very, very simple thought to help us. You use that part of the mind that thinks, but we're using it so simply that easily we're not going to get swept away by it. And it's just pointing us, hey you, it's like saying, hey you, this is where you're paying attention. Here. This place. Now. Here. And so you hear a sound, say hearing. And then you say the word hearing, and then you hear more fully. You experience that more fully. And the label hearing reminds you, oh yeah, that's what I'm paying attention to. And you hear more fully. There are some people who use the mental noting technique as a checklist approach to mindfulness. They hear a sound, hearing, done that, what's next? And that's not the intention of it. The intention of it is actually to nudge the mind to be more fully present for what we're experiencing. The guideline I often hear my teachers say is that when you're doing mindfulness practice, 95% of your practice should be this being present for our experiences, this feeling, sensing more fully what the present moment experience is. 5% of our efforts is the mental labeling. And that ratio is very important to remember, because sometimes people who learn mental noting are doing 95% effort in noting and 5% effort to paying attention. And then you're going to go astray. So so you're using that little piece of the mind that thinks to help you be present rather than having it be out of control and take you away. It can cut through a lot. It can cut through the thinking mind. It's kind of like using a thought to help settle the thinking, to cut through it. So it can be very helpful that way. It's also very helpful because it more helps you more fully acknowledge what is going on. There's many situations in human life where the acknowledgement of something in our inner life, in our psychological life, really helps with the settling of it, with the freeing of it. And if you don't acknowledge something, sometimes it kind of festers and stays. Most dramatically, that takes place, I think, when there's been some kind of ethical transgression. And sometimes it really helps to confess that transgression to someone, to acknowledge it publicly, at least to one other person. It kind of it really helps the inner life, the mind, somehow disavow itself or disengage itself or step aside from its being caught in that kind of activity. So the acknowledgement of something can really help. So the naming of something can really help in many ways. We have the ancient fairy tales or stories where if you name the dragon loses its power. Or you name the ghost or the vampire or something. And so this idea of naming. And with naming our inner life, for example, our emotional life, one of the ways the power that gets lost, there's a power that's lost and a power that's gained in naming. One of the powers that's lost is the power of identification, the power of being caught or entangled with the experience. And when we identify the experience, we identify with it, say, this is who I am in some way, or we take it personally, our experience, we tend to fuel and give power to the experience, to the emotions. But if we don't identify with it, then the power of identification, if we name it, the power of identification can be relaxed, softened. And so the one power gets less, and the power that gets increased is the power or the strength of that part of the mind, that part of the psyche, which can be aware of what's happening and not be entangled with it. That's capable of being independent of what is being known. So if it's like that part of the mind that's capable of staying on the riverbank rather than going into the water. So and part of the art of this mental noting, the naming, is to try to name in such a way that the naming itself, the naming of the experience itself, helps you to be a little bit free or independent from what you're experiencing. And there's many times you'll probably find that you're not so free from the experience. You have a headache, or you have a knee pain, or you're sad or angry, or something's going on, or someone near you is kind of making all kinds of noise, and how could that person be doing that? Then I better write a note to the board of IMC, and you know, the mind, you know. Oh, I heard a great story that on some of us who were on Saturday at the retreat. That was a very nice story of a Zen student who went to, he was there at the retreat, he's telling us the story, it happened to him. He went to see, he was there, I guess it was Sesshin, he's at Zen Center, and he went to see the abbot of Zen Center for an interview. And he went to the interview and he started saying, we're supposed to take these bodhisattva vows here at Zen Center, we're supposed to be here for the benefit of all beings and help the world. And here we're just sitting in this, you know, he didn't say exactly this way, we're sitting in this basement meditating all day. We should be out in the world making a difference in the world, and we're just selfish and self-absorbed here, and if you really were serious about what you're doing, we would leave. And he paused for a minute, and the abbot just looked at him without saying anything. And then he started again, you know, saying the same thing, and the abbot just looked at him again. And then at some point there was a long silence, and he said, and I started wondering, well, maybe I blew it. You know, they're going to kick me out of here now, they're going to take me seriously, and I've really been disrespectful. And he thought he was in trouble. And so then the abbot looked at him and said, "This train of thought, did it begin on the in-breath or the out-breath?" So to be that attentive to see which moment, which the in-breath, the out-breath, you get caught, mind gets carried away, is to be very mindful. Then you have a choice. If you have that place of your little, where the mind is independent from what it's thinking or engaged in, then there's much more choice with what to do. And a big part of mindfulness is this learning to be independent of what we know. And that's an odd thing, to have an awareness which knows, but is also independent. To have an awareness which knows more fully, that senses, experiences, feels more fully what's going on. That's part of the nudging of the noting. Help us say, yes, let's experience this. And then at the same time, help us be independent from what we know. So now I'll give you a gruesome analogy that the Buddha gave. So it's okay. If you take a dead cow, and you skin it. You kind of take the leather off, the skin off. Peel it off very carefully, kind of just getting it all off. And then you have this, you know, skin that came off that cow. You can, if you want, then drape that skin back over that carcass, over that dead cow. And it would fit because it came off that cow, right? It would fit, but it would never attach again. So the Buddha said something like this, that there's a possibility in being awake, being mindful, being very attentive to our experience, where our experience, our knowing, our awareness really fits this world fully. But there's also a kind of disconnection that's been established in being awake. And that disconnection is not one that's meant to make us aloof from our experience. We're still right there, we still fit. We fit maybe, you know, hopefully mindfulness makes us fit better. But there isn't the greed, the clinging, the fear, the aversion, which is the sinews and the skin or the muscles, whatever that holds the skin onto the carcass, you know, all that. That's what's gone. And that helps the mind feel like there's a kind of an independence that's going on. So the mental noting is not required to discover that independence, But the mental noting, when used as an art form, I think of it as an art form, is beginning to find a what, you know, where does that place where I'm awake, I'm present, I'm really there, but I'm also not caught by the experience. And it doesn't follow completely in the train of thought, but I wanted to read you this wonderful passage from a clinical psychology article where they used the technique of mental noting for their clinical patients. In one case, a divorced woman would have bouts of depression and anxiety when she remembered her ex-husband's bizarre sexual demands. She was trained to label her thoughts as remembering, remembering. And within a few days, she could see the causal relationship between the thoughts and the anxiety and depression. That's pretty good to see that connection. Once you see the causal connection, so if you label your thinking, you can see, oh, now I'm remembering. Now I'm planning, and see it really well. And see then the causal effect that thinking has. Oh, you felt really good, you woke up, you had a nice day, nice beginning of a day. And then you notice that whenever you start thinking, rehearsing that conversation you had last week, you feel kind of your energy is draining out. You feel it's kind of getting more and more depressed. You start feeling that, seeing that connection between your thoughts, remembering, and how you're feeling. And if you can see that connection, then perhaps you can make a choice to not follow those thoughts, to stop them, to let go. But if you don't see that connection at all, you could maybe get carried away down that river. Another woman who was hospitalized for manic depression and schizophrenia was instructed to watch the second hand of a clock, and when her mind went off the clock, to name the distraction. Soon she realized that most of her distractions were related to the past. She was then instructed to label them as remembering, remembering. With this technique, she learned to identify herself with the objective watcher of her disturbing thoughts instead of the depressed thinker. There you go. Soon she began to gain insight into the nature of her illness and was released from hospital. Another woman who was hospitalized for anxiety, depression, and inability to function adequately rebelled against any suggestion of introspection. And as she was a Mormon, the word Buddhist or meditation was not mentioned. As a therapist interacted with her, it became evident that much of her day was spent fantasizing and imagining to avoid the anxiety of her life. The habit of fantasizing was discussed with her, and then she was asked to undertake a psychological procedure. That's what you did this evening, psychological procedure. To her surprise, she was asked to bake a cake. However, she had to do it extremely mindfully with minute attention to detail. When the persistent fantasies would arise, she was instructed to just observe them. After a while, she found that she could intentionally return to the present moment and so function more adequately. She also began to get insight into the nature of her anxiety and depression. Well, in the last one, she wasn't instructed to label, but just to watch carefully and watch what took her away. I find that mental noting is a wonderful truth teller in my practice. There are times when I'm meditating, and I think, I'm kind of present. It's going pretty well here. And then I say, well, maybe I'll test this out and see if that's really the case. And then I start noting, or counting the breath works this way also, or noting the experiences. And then I'll find out that I do like two or three or four notes before I'm off. But the fact that I have the noting as a reference helps me to notice that I'm wandering off. And so I suspect that half the people who don't like to note, because they feel like it doesn't really kind of keeps them kind of separate from their experience, it kind of keeps them kind of somehow removed, they don't like that cognitive part of their mind, they don't think it helps. They're probably, half of those people who don't like it, if they tried it, would find it out that they were fooling themselves. That they were actually a lot less present than they thought they were, a lot more less connected than they thought they were. Another way that the noting is kind of a truth teller is that sometimes a noting is not independent of the experience. Sometimes a noting is our reaction to the experience, whatever is happening in the present moment, our reaction to it is entangled with the inner verbalization. So you're sitting here, minding your own business, and your knee begins hurting. So a non-reactive, independent kind of noting would be, oh, pain. Let's experience the pain. There it is, my knee. I'll feel it, pain, stabbing, burning, twisting, pain. A reactive way of noting would be, oh, shoot, pain. Pain, oh, pain. Oh, pain. Oh. And there's all these things, you know, pity and aversion, all kinds of things. Or if you have pleasure, some wonderful, nice feeling, finally you have pleasure in your meditation, joy. And so you don't just say joy. There's joy. You say, ah, joy. So if you listen to how you do that inner verbalization, it sometimes will show you a little bit about how you've gotten involved. And that can be very helpful if what you're trying to do is find that place of independence. And that place of independence is exquisite. So you say, it's not a diminishing, but actually an enhancing. Mental noting is an art form. And rather, I like to call it art form rather than a technique, even though I've labeled that as a, called it a technique today. Because as an art form, it's something that takes a while to learn how to do. And I know some people who've tried it, for 20 minutes and said, this is not for me. I've done a lot of meditation, my mind gets kind of quiet, and this kind of agitates my mind. It kind of uses a part of mind that I've been trying to put to rest, and it's not for me. But that's like someone who, has spent a lifetime walking. And then someone says, it might be nice for you to try a bicycle. And they have walking down really well. But then they try a bicycle, and they find out that the first 5 minutes on the bicycle, they keep falling and wobbling, and they hardly make any distance at all. And they say, forget this bicycle. I'm not getting anywhere. Walking is so much better. But with bicycles, you have to keep doing it. You have to learn the skill. And after you've learned the skill, after you've done it for a few days or however long it takes to learn it, after a while you can ride the bicycle without your hands. It's so easy. Look, no hands. And it's really, you do it effortlessly, or not effortlessly, but without thinking, without any kind of agitation, without any, the mind getting worked up, or, it's second nature to ride the bike. So the same thing with the mental noting. If you do it on a regular basis, try it for a while, it's a skill that after a while becomes second nature. And the agitating aspect of it that might happen initially will settle away as we learn to do it. Some people in doing mental noting, So another part of the art is learning how to say the mental noting in a way that is helpful. And generally that means to say it softly, like a little whisper in the mind. And probably it's more useful to try to find the quietest place you can think in the mind. You probably, if any of you have done something like robbing a bank and then watched your thoughts and then compared it to a time when, everything was beautiful and safe and you'd had a wonderful life for the last, week and you took a nice nap on the meadow and you woke up and you were well fed and just everything's great. And then look at your thoughts then and compare those two. You probably find that when you rob the bank, your thoughts are really wild and strong. Where are they? Are they going to catch me? Whereas, in the meadow thing, you wake up, you're thinking it's really soft and gentle. Maybe. So, you know it from the softest place or the quietest place, the whispering place you can in your mind. It's also kind of helpful to do that because then it also helps calm the mind a little bit. Many minds need to be calmed. And as the mind gets more concentrated in meditation, sometimes you'll need to soften the mental noting more, make it calmer, make it more subtle, more of a whisper, more and more whisper. The kind of sort of matches, it's not more, so the noting, the activity of noting is not more agitated than the activity of the meditating mind. The mind gets more and more subtle, so you have to make that activity of the noting more subtle also. Um, So there's a variety of ways of noting. One way is to note everything that you're going to bring attention to. You're going to clearly, consciously attend in your mindfulness. So you're sitting here, you want to watch your breath, you'd label the breath. A sound arises that's strong enough that says, okay, I should attend to this for a moment, really be there, acknowledge it, so you name that. There's a pain, you be there and you name that. So whatever happens like that, and it's best to do it kind of in a relaxed way, because you want to give everything to do time in mindfulness. So you don't want to rush around. When you carefully know things, you don't want to rush around and know a lot of things superficially. You want to just kind of be there relaxed and know certain, you know, the obvious things, the compelling things, well. So just kind of go and name everything. Some people will name only certain things. Some people only note the breath, and everything else they just kind of know without noting. Some people will not note the breath, have a silent awareness with the breathing, but like the woman in the clinical study, will only note what takes them away from the breath, whatever that might be. They find that very helpful because they catch themselves then earlier, quicker, and they come back. Some people I know only note their thinking, and when the thinking is taking them away. So not just anything that takes them away. Like if they're in knee pain, they don't note it. They bring awareness there, but they don't note it. But they note their thinking. I've known some people have had a lot of benefit. The only thing they note, or they spend some time only noting, the feeling tone of the experience. So the feeling tone means whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, what you're experiencing. And somehow that noting, oh, this is a pleasant experience, helps with that place of finding a place of freedom or independence. It's best to note with an obvious label. And if you, so it means like, if you find yourself thinking, you don't start analyzing what kind of thinking this is it? But rather just thinking. However, if you're planning all the time, and it becomes really glaringly obvious that that's what you're doing, planning again, then it can be helpful to be more precise with a label, planning. Sometimes precision helps with this acknowledging. So planning. You don't want to spend any time trying to figure out what it is, but just name what it is. If you know you're having an experience that you should be paying attention to, but you don't know what it is, you don't know what the label is, then you can use a generic label such as experience. I'm having an experience. California thing anyway. So experience. Or you could, or one of the great labels, which kind of covers everything sometimes, at certain times, is chaos. There's so many things are going on at once. I don't know what's going on. I can't find anything in this big mess. Chaos. What's chaos feel like? And then you be there for the chaos, and then it kind of narrows it a little bit. Oh, chaos feels like a lot of energy all over my body. Sometimes I found that in noting, especially if the mind is getting quiet, I find it sometimes very helpful to stay with the noting. It kind of like keeps me on track, keeps the concentration going, keeps the concentration present. Just keeps kind of like, it's like a little, it's like herding cattle, you know, like, or, you know. Sometimes the mind feels like you're herding cats, but eventually it feels like you're herding trained cattle or something. You're kind of just keeping it there. It takes very little, but very little effort, but keep it going straight ahead. And sometimes the mental noting, I have done, I just say my note has been yes to everything. I find that kind of nice. It's kind of comforting. Just say yes to everything. And just because anything else is too complicated. Mm-hmm. Just the same thing. It's kind of like it's just a little nudge. Say, yes, stay here. And sometimes when my mind has gotten really still and subtle, and I found it helpful still in order to help me stay on track, stay present, was to, in the most subtle little corner of my mind, to grunt at the experience. Mental note was a grunt. So, you know, you can be a little bit creative. You know, it's supposed to be, you know, kind of not supposed to be something you get tied up in and you know, anxious about. It's an art form. You can experiment with different ways of doing it. And one of the ways you might experiment with doing it, if you've never done this, is to start with the word here. Experiment with that. Here. Here. and then feel what that's like. Here, feel how that's like, and see if there's some non-acceptance of what's here. Here, and feel if there's some attempt to get someplace else with the mind, to go to be in the future, be in the past. Here, and then feel what it's like to be a mind that wants to go forward and backwards. Here, feel what it's like to be have a mind that doesn't like what's happening. Here, this is what it's like. Here, there's something very powerful about here. It's just like this. This is the way it is. This is the way it is. Our lived experience of reality is like this at this moment. It's the most precious thing, one of the most precious things we have as human beings, is the present moment. Or to say it differently, the lived experience. And our lived experience can only happen in the present moment. It doesn't happen yesterday. It doesn't happen in our thoughts about yesterday. It doesn't happen in our thoughts about the future. It has to do about what is here, living. The living, energetic, vital, pulsing experience of now. So to wake up to that, and then to discover all the beauty of that, all the wonderfulness of that, that can happen. So you might try the label here. And then if you get really good at it, and you're really stabilized, you manage to be here, you're awake, you're present, you can stop doing it. You don't have to do the mental noting if you're really here, and it's not needed anymore. But if you're doing here, and you do it long enough until you kind of arrive here with the mind, then one thing you can do before you stop is you can say to yourself, here, here. So you don't take it all too seriously. So I hope that was understandable, clear enough, and helpful. And if you're one of these people who've tried it and find that it doesn't work for you, it's not for you, it's fine. You don't have to be a person who does the mental noting. There's always people for whom it doesn't work. And if you're one of those people for whom it doesn't work, maybe today's talk has allowed you to have some mudita, sympathetic joy, for those people for whom it works. You understand their practice better. So, thank you very much.